So you're a brand new Jewish believer in Jesus. You're just a teenager. Your dad sends you to talk to the rabbis and the counter-missionaries. What do you say to them? And who, pray tell, comes to your rescue?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we know that you might not be able to get to Israel today, so we are bringing Israel to you. Michael Brown, glad to be with you today on The Line of Fire with a special guest I'll be introducing in a moment, a longtime friend, Jewish believer in Jesus, living in Israel with his Israeli wife, raising his kids there in Israel. We will be focusing on Israel and on Jewish issues today. If you've got questions, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Maybe you think that the Jewish people don't have a right to be in the land today. Maybe you think, according to the Bible, God's finished with Israel, and therefore there's no legitimacy, prophetic legitimacy, God's purpose in the state of Israel today. Maybe you're a Jewish person that doesn't believe in Jesus. This is the show for you. 866-34-TRUTH, or go on Facebook if you'd like to ask a question there. Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Before I introduce my guest, here's an email I received yesterday from friends in Israel. It's been a violent day in Israel. Early this morning, 8 mortar shells fell on southern Israel. A few hours later, a rocket exploded in the city of Ashdod, followed by 2 more powerful Grad-type rocket attacks in a residential area of the city of Beersheba. In Beersheba and Ashdod, all schools were closed following the rocket attack. The warning siren sounded, giving residents of the city less than 1 minute to take cover in their bomb shelters. Israel is holding Hamas responsible for this wave of attacks. Around 3 p.m. this afternoon, a bomb exploded near the entrance to the city of Jerusalem. This was yesterday from Israel, close to the very crowded central bus station. One person was killed, 30 others were injured. It was the first time in 4 years that there has been a bomb attack in the city of Jerusalem. Immediately, the local TV station started sending live pictures from the scene and reporting the number of wounded. It brought back painful memories of the years of the first and second Intifada, when these kinds of attacks were common in the cities of Israel. I received other emails from friends that said we were just 500 meters away. We were 1,500 feet away. Our family was just getting the kids from school, and we were nearby, and the bomb blast. Friends, this is real life in Israel. Why all the hostility? Why such world hostility towards Israel? Why is it that the Bible even singles out Jerusalem as a city that will be a city of controversy for the whole world? I mean, read Zechariah 12, read Zechariah 14. I remember being in Africa, hearing evangelist Reinhard Bonnke, we had on as a guest last week, hearing him preach in Mombasa in Kenya in 1989, reading from Zechariah 12 and 14 and saying, this shows you that this book, the Bible, is really God's word. To many Muslims listening, hey, the Bible is God's word. It even singles out the city of Jerusalem as a city of controversy for the whole world at the end of the age. Why Jerusalem? Why this violent attack? Is it because the Jews are usurpers? Is it because they are taking land that doesn't belong to them, and these are just freedom fighters fighting for their rights, or is there a greater battle going on? And what's it like to be in Israel as a Jewish follower of Jesus? My guest, Ron Cantor. Ron is in the studio with us. We are right here live in WAVA Studios in Washington, D.C., and Ron, we've just got a few seconds before the break, but you're from Richmond, Virginia, aren't you?
That's right.
And so Richmond's just what, hour and a half from here?
The hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the horrible traffic.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been living in Israel?
7.5 years.
7.5 years. So your kids, how old's your oldest now?
She's almost 22.
All right, it's 3 girls, 22.
19 and 17.
All right, so they've lived.
In fact, today is my daughter's 19th birthday.
All right, well, send her a
happy
birthday.
I'm sure she's listening.
From Israel. Hey, send her a happy birthday. Listen, we're going to talk about your life story, talk about life in Israel, when we're back right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are talking about Israel and what it's like to be a Jewish believer, Messianic Jew living in Israel. Michael Brown, welcome back to The Line of Fire. If you have a question that you'd like to ask a Jewish believer in Yeshua, Jesus, living in Israel today, married to an Israeli woman, raising kids in that society, if you'd like to ask a question, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire for resources that are relevant to today's show as well. So, Ron, what year did we meet? 1984?
84, I believe it was, 84, 85.
It's been a while, man. That's most of your life you've known me.
That is true.
All right, so you were a brand new believer in Jesus.
But not most of your life.
It's like half. Yeah, I mean, okay. It's just about there. So you're 18 years old, you had come to faith, you were very zealous for Jesus as a young Jewish believer. Your dad wants you to talk to the rabbi. You got to talk to the rabbis. They'll set you straight and basically said, okay. And you said, okay, if you can find me a rabbi who knows God,
right?
Then I'll.
Well, I had already been meeting with a Lubavitch rabbi in Richmond for many, many months.
So an ultra-Orthodox rabbi.
Right. And we had a very good relationship, and it was very clear from the outset what his goal was. We'd meet weekly. But I think it was about a year after that, I said to my mother, we were having a conversation, I said, if you can find a Jewish person who claims to have a personal relationship with God, I'd love to meet with them.
Well, I mean, any Jew going to a synagogue would say they have a personal relationship with God, right?
I don't know. Would they? I've heard my dear friend Bob Smith in Richmond, Virginia, who accompanied me to meet with some ultra-Orthodox rabbis about a year before this. He asked him point blank about knowing God, because the rabbi was saying we were in a it was a symposium, a conference where this rabbi was seeking to disprove Jesus as the Messiah and warn the Jewish community against people like me. And a woman, not a woman, a girl, 18, 19 years old, she stood up, purple hair, black clothes, obviously not your typical young Jewish girl, but she was searching. And she said to this rabbi, how do I find God? How can I know God? And his only advice to her was study. And then he went on. And so Bob challenged him. He said, do you love God? Do you love your wife in your heart or in your mind? Saying that these guys did not appear to proclaim, not just to have a relationship with God, or even to say you can know God, you can know about God, you can read about God. And I would say, wait, no, Moses knew God. Abraham was the friend of God. If you can't offer me that, well, why would I even consider this?
So your folks found some rabbis in Brooklyn. And you were, well, why did you go talk to the rabbis in Brooklyn? 18 years old, were you going there to change them?
No, I wasn't that confident. But my mother, you know, I think maybe a week went by, I'd forgotten about it. And she said, I found some Jewish people who claimed that they have a relationship with God. And that was Scott and Yehuda. They were ultra-Orthodox Jews living in Brooklyn. So I said, okay, I'll go. Now, I went into Brooklyn, and I got to be honest with you, from a cultural point of view, it was wonderful to see, you know, I was raised Jewish, but I was raised in the South in Richmond. You go into Brooklyn, in certain areas of Brooklyn, everything's Jewish.
Yeah.
You go in the pizza parlor and it's kosher. The guy, not only is it kosher, but the guy making the pizza's wearing a kippah. And it was like this 4-day presentation of, look what you can have in traditional Judaism that Messianic Judaism doesn't offer you.
Ah, so I mean, this is the real, you're around the real authentic Jews. I remember when I was 18, same deal, going into Brooklyn to meet with the ultra-Orthodox rabbis, and the rabbi with me who was conservative, so that means, you know, not as religious, we peek our head in the synagogue, and I remember thinking, ooh, all these guys with the long beards and praying in Hebrew, it seems more authentically Jewish than my church. So you're now confronted with this as a new believer in Yeshua. So you hadn't had all the time to study. You didn't know Hebrew, etc.
I didn't know anything. The first day they asked me to share how I became a believer, I shared my testimony. And to this day, there was God's presence entered that room as I shared my testimony. At the end, whether they were being manipulative or being honest, I don't know. But they said, we believe you have had an experience with God. Of course, then they began to explain to me that that God was using Jesus to get my attention because I was turned off to traditional Judaism. And now that God had my attention...
through Jesus, in their mind, a false messiah, false prophet, deceiver, that God used this.
No, in their mind, Jesus was not the God, but Jesus was for the Gentiles.
Okay.
Like it is a good and righteous...
But it's not for the Jews, though.
Right. Even though Jesus was Jewish, even though all of his followers were Jewish... Even though the writers of the New Covenant, for the most part, were Jewish.
And they claimed that he was fulfilling what was written in Moses and the prophets as opposed to starting a new religion, he's for the Gentiles.
Right, he's for the Gentiles. And for you, Ron, you need to be a traditional Jew like we are.
And here's what's happening on my end. There's a guy in our school of ministry that I was teaching at on Long Island that had been a close friend of Ron's and helped lead Ron to the Lord. And he calls me and he says, listen, I got a friend of mine. He's in there with these ultra-Orthodox rabbis. Now, these guys specialized in dealing with young people back then like you
right.
and me.
Well, they were very different. It's because most people we meet like this, they're deprogrammers. They literally will kidnap you with permission from your parents.
I mean, that is the extreme.
Offered to my parents.
Offered to kidnap me.
But my parents, good liberal Jews that they are, said that's ridiculous. Stay away from my son. But there was an ultra-Orthodox Jew, Shochet, from Canada, that literally offered to grab me and deprogram me. Scott and Yehuda, they were different. What they would do is they would talk like believers. They would say things like, the Lord's keeping me humble, or I was in his word today. They would take
the Lord spoke to me.
The Lord spoke.
Praise the Lord.
They would take the terminology that we use and basically say, hey, look, everything you have, we have without Jesus.
Right. And why go against what your fathers and forefathers have believed through the centuries? Why they died rather than believe the things that you're believing? Look at all the crazy stuff the church has done. Look at that. Nobody even keeps the law. The law is forever. So you get hit with all this.
Yeah, and you want them to be right. I remember being with them, wanting them to be right. Who wants rejection? Who wants to take a stand that's going to bring shame to your family and all your parents' friends are embarrassed by you or don't want you hanging out with their kids anymore? Of course, I would have loved to come home and say, hey, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I found the truth. I'm okay. I haven't rejected anything. The problem was this, is that no matter how much sense they made to me, and they made sense. I was 1 year in the faith. These guys were professionals. But no matter how much sense they made, in my heart, I knew I had found life, mm-hmm. and I knew that they could not offer me life.
Yeah.
Of course, each day I would come back to the hotel room and call you up, and I'd tell you what they would say, and you coach me through that, and by the grace of God, I was able to survive that event.
And you know, we coached you through that by saying, here are biblical answers, not shut your ears, just biblical answers. And then they started to put you under a little bit more pressure to get you to stay a little longer and so on, which maybe the true colors came out a bit more. And obviously we still pray for these gentlemen to come to know the Lord. It was a long journey though, but God brought you from there, brought us together as friends through these years now, and brought you over to live in Israel. So when we come back, we're going to talk about first what it's like to live in Israel as a Jewish believer in Jesus, and then we want to talk about the violence, what's happening there, give you a perspective. If you've got a question, 866-34-TRUTH, a question about life in Israel, a question for a Jewish believer, or Earl in Houston, you'll be up first on the other side of the break. It is a great burden that we carry here on the Line of Fire to reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to see Israel saved. I'm in regular dialogue with rabbis. Just last night, spent about 45 minutes on the phone with an ultra-Orthodox rabbi. We're in regular dialogue. He wants to change my views. I want to change his views. I've written about these things extensively. I've done debates with rabbis all over America, even at Oxford University in England and even in Canada and other places, radio, TV, because we are 100% convinced that according to the scriptures, Jesus is the promised Messiah. Yeshua is the promised Messiah. If it's not him, there cannot be a Messiah for Israel. If you're a Jewish person listening and you don't know who this Jesus Yeshua is, and you're searching for more of God, you're searching for truth, maybe you're a traditional Jew and you're listening secretly to the broadcast, maybe you've left faith entirely, you consider yourself an atheist and you happen to tune in and heard talk about Israel, caught your attention. If you recognize if you're questioning your own relationship with God, contact us, askdrbrown.org. And I encourage you, stand with us as we reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Stay tuned for this special announcement.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm here broadcasting live from the Washington, D.C. area with my longtime Jewish believing friend, Ron Kanter, living in Israel now with his family for the last 7+ years. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you've got a question for Ron, a question about what it's like to be a Jewish believer living in Israel, or you differ with some of our pro-Israel theology or stance, by all means, give us a call. Tell us why. Also, my website, AskDrBrown.org. If you click on Real Messiah, a whole host of free resources for reaching Jewish people with the gospel, debates you can watch, messages you can listen to, articles you can read, testimonies, all for free on the Real Messiah website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Real Messiah. Ron, living in Israel, you've lived in America most of your life, now you've lived in Israel. Would you say it's harder living in Israel in general? How would you just compare the feel in terms of the pressures of life and just living there day to day?
It's difficult to compare because when you say, is it harder? Absolutely, it's harder. If you say, would you like to come back to America? Absolutely not. I love my life there.
So how is it harder?
It's harder because...
Everyone's Jewish. Okay, that's
except for the terrorists. It's harder because the cost of living is very high. Everything costs more. Everything is taxed. Obviously, we have to pay for our military. We sit in
How much of the budget goes towards military?
I couldn't tell you exactly, but a much larger percentage than say here in the U.S.
That's because you're all warmongers and hawks, right?
It is because we don't want to die. We want to be able to exist another day. And in Israelis, it's a different mentality. It's a different culture. I love to tell a joke. As you know, I have been diagnosed with ADHD. I even watching me right now, you can see I'm moving. I move constantly. I have a very low attention span. And I spent my entire life hearing people tell me to grow up, act my age, stop joking around. Not everything's a joke, Ron. And I just when I was beginning to believe them, I visited Israel for the first time. And when I got off the plane and began to meet the people of this country, my homeland, I thought, my goodness, they're all like me. Everything's a joke. Everyone's aggressive. Everyone's beeping their horn. Not that I drive aggressive. I'm not going to say that on the air, but they drive aggressive. So in certain ways, when I first visited Israel in 1991, I just felt like I belong here. I am one of these people. And so...
But it's a high pressure. It's a constant push, and you have to fight for everything. If you just you get a taxi ride somewhere, and you're just going to let the taxi driver charge you what he's going to charge. You got to fight.
If you start your day with, say, I'm going to get these four things done, and you get one of them done, you feel like it's a miracle.
Uh-huh.
Because every time you go to get something done, you're missing this paper. Oh, you forgot this, or we changed our policy. And it's a constant, constant grind. And yet we have grace and we love it.
Now, if you're, let's say you're going into a mall, right? Mm-hmm. You can just walk in with a bag or a suitcase or you know, big coat. No one's...
a suitcase. I typically don't take a suitcase into any mall.
Let's just have...
A briefcase.
Right. So you're going into a mall. You can just walk in and walk out, right?
No. You going into a mall would be like going into a courthouse here in the States. It's not quite the same as getting on an airplane, but you're scanned. You have to put your phone in anything metal in a separate area. You can't just walk into a mall.
Well, because you got some weird thing that you're going to be like micromanage everybody.
People have tended to blow themselves up in a desire to kill as many Jews as possible.
So the same reason you spend extra money on military, the same reason you have scanners going into malls, that you don't want to die that day.
Exactly. And every now and then it gets on your nerves when they can't open my trunk because they check just to park. Uh-huh. You have to have your trunk open, your doors open. Every now and then it begins to bother you. And then you say, wait a minute, I prefer this than to not.
Let's go to the phones. Earl in Houston, Texas. What's your question today, sir?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was going to ask, what percentage of Jews are moving toward being messianic in Israel? And I mean, is there, do you see a growth in Israel toward that, or is it, you know, it's just no growth?
Well, no, there's definitely growth. I mean, when you think back to 1948, when Israel was rebirthed, according to Scripture, I might add, as a nation, there was maybe 100 believers in the whole country and maybe two or three congregations. Today, in 2011, there's no exact estimate, but most people believe about 18,000 Jewish believers. That doesn't include volunteers from the nations that come to bless us and encourage us, and Gentiles that are able to live in Jewish believers. So that's a huge growth. Now, in light of the fact that there's between 6 and 7 million Jews living in Israel, it's not what revival, but it is a biblically prophesied revival. And we are, from year to year, from week to week even, we are growing. We're not.
All right. Now, just to take this a little further and to help Earl get a bigger picture of this, you've got Russian believing Jews. So they've come from Russia.
Right.
Ethiopian Jews that are believers. Folks that have come from America and other countries that are Jewish believers in Jesus. But you're actually seeing more native-born Israelis coming to faith these days, aren't you?
It's generally believed that about half of the body of believers in Israel are native Israelis. Like my wife. My wife was born in Jerusalem. Her family, in the middle of the night, got on a ship in Morocco. One of the largest ethnic groups in Israel, believe it or not, are Moroccan Jews. Hundreds of thousands came between 1956 and 1962-63. But she was born in 65 in Jerusalem, and she is a believer in Yeshua. So, we are seeing that. Our congregation in Tel Aviv, we do everything in Hebrew. We don't even allow interpretation into English or Russian or Spanish or any of the other immigrant languages, because we're seeking to make a statement: the gospel is Israeli. It's not a foreign religion. It's not something that we've invited missionaries in to share. We have native-born Israelis preaching the gospel, leading in worship, and the conversation, here's the beauty of it, Dr. Brown, is the conversation at the end of the service is in Hebrew.
Amazing. And so, I mean, this is pioneer stuff. God is moving their pressures, their difficulties, their challenges. God is moving. A whole lot more to talk about, but I'm coming up to a break here. Earlier today, right before the show, I was at a pastor's luncheon, pastor's appreciation luncheon, with about 250 pastors and leaders from the greater D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, sponsored by this station right here, WAVA, from which I'm broadcasting today. And I had a table out with my books, A Queer Thing Happened to America. And I was talking to different folks. One woman came up to me. She's a pastor. She's also a first grade teacher. She's talking about the curriculum that's being put forward there. Others came and were talking about what's happening in the society. And this is actually happening in Israel. Tel Aviv is a major gay-friendly city. There's even gay pride marches in Jerusalem. If you have not yet ordered A Queer Thing Happened to America, what are you waiting for? It is essential reading. Go to Amazon.com, read the reviews, and order the book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Relevant for Israel, relevant for America. And our website, AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm sitting here with my special guest, longtime friend, Jewish believer, Ron Cantor. Ron, what is your website?
messiahsmandate.org.
All right, messiahsmandate.org. We're going to talk in a moment about a real neat initiative you're involved with. But we're focusing today on life in Israel as a Jewish believer in Jesus, life in Israel in general, the pressures. Just got a note here from some of our other dear friends, Jewish believers in Jesus living in Israel. The person that was killed at the Jerusalem bus stop bombing yesterday was a Scottish woman, a Scottish right. Bible translator who was studying at the Hebrew University. Jean Gardner, well-regarded Bible translator, came to Israel at the beginning of the year to study Hebrew and to take courses at Hebrew University. maybe you hear she dies and it strikes home all the more just the absolute senselessness of this violence. Ron, before we get back to Israel, focusing on the larger Middle East question, I just haven't had the time on the show to get into this, but what in the world are we doing in Libya? I've been wanting to ask that question for several days now. What in the world are we doing in Libya? When there's an uprising against the Ahmadinejad government in Iran, we don't join in as people are getting butchered there. People are getting killed in all these other Muslim countries and protesters being put down. And you know, do we even know who the Libyan rebels are?
Right.
But one thing we do know, we're always hearing that the problems in the Middle East are all the fault of the Jews. It's all the fault of the Jews. I heard somebody that the rebels want to take out Gaddafi because he's Jewish. I don't know if you heard that charge. But Israel can't be blamed for what's happening in the Arab world right now, can it?
Sure they can.
Okay. I asked the wrong question. Rationally, logically, cannot be blamed.
No, but they will blame us. I heard, and if not directly, indirectly, I heard the great Minister Louis Farrakhan ranting and raving the other day and saying, how in the world can we attack Libya when we let the Israelis, you know, kill innocent men, women, and children in Gaza? Of course, Minister Farrakhan forgot to mention that those the folks in Gaza run by Hamas tend to like to shoot bombs at us. Just like yesterday, several bombs, rockets, missiles coming out of Gaza against Israel. So they'll find a way to directly or indirectly blame us. But in answer to your first question is, what are we doing in Libya? I don't know. And I'm not sure our president really knows what he's doing. It's hard for me to get too upset about people who are against Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, he is a madman. He's a Saddam Hussein. He runs a police state. He is a killer. My concern, and I wrote an op-ed maybe about a month ago at the beginning of the uprisings in English in Egypt, and I asked the question, what's worse than an evil dictatorship? Well, an Islamic fundamentalist state.
Exactly.
Because at least evil dictators want to survive, whereas Islamic extremists, they don't care if they die. They will do anything to destroy you. And my great fear right now is, who are we defending in Libya? Because Al-Qaeda claims to represent them.
Exactly. And in Egypt, did we open the door for the Muslim Brotherhood? I mean, it's complex. Hey, we've got a minute before the break. Tell us about your new initiative with Messiah's Mandate. What are you doing?
Well, it's the Isaiah 2 initiative. We've been doing this now it's not even new anymore. We've been doing it for about 3 years, but Israel has been a receiving nation for so long. The Lord began to speak to us, but that it's time for the gospel not to just be received by Israel, but to go out from Israel. Ki mitzion tetzeh haTorah, and the word of the Lord will go forth from Zion. So we began to organize groups of young adults, Israelis, and take them to different parts of the world to do outreach. Our first trip was to Nigeria. We preached tens of thousands. We were told that 103,000 decision cards were received.
And folks can help send these young Israelis to go preach by going to messiahsmandate.org.
Or just Google Ron Cantor and you'll get there.
All right, Cantor, like Eric Cantor, who's a relative. All right, back with more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I saw this picture of a Muslim anti-Semite who couldn't spell, and he wanted to say all Jews must die, but he misspelled Jews, and it was juice. All Jews must die, be it orange juice or
it's apple a great,
juice.
Great tragedy of our grape juice, prune juice. Everyone's against them.
But today, friends, here in the studio, you do get two Jews for the price of one. And if you've got questions, this is Michael Brown with my dear friend Ron Cantor. If you've got questions for a Jewish believer living in Israel, today is a great day to ask. Ron, in a moment, I want to focus on the question of, okay, it's life in Israel is challenging. It's a lot of pressure, and the society is different. However, being a Jewish believer in Jesus adds other dimensions to it. But let me grab another call first. Let's go back to Houston, Texas. Paul, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Paul is gone. Paul wanted to ask if most Jews, I take it to mean Jewish believers, are post-trib in their orientation. I would say, I'm just going to answer that, Paul, that in point of fact, there are plenty of Jewish believers who are pre-trib. There are well-known Jewish believers who are pre-trib. And those who are pre-trib dispensationalists in their thinking tend to be pro-Israel, believe that Israel today is a fulfillment of prophecy. That being said, there are many Jewish believers, and maybe a higher percentage, that are not pre-trib, that if they hold to that same end-time scenario would be called post-trib, because their sense is solidarity with their people, that we are part of Messiah's body, part of what's called the church, but we are part of the people, part of the nation. Why would we be pulled out at the time of Israel's greatest need? That's the time to be there in solidarity with our fellow Jews in the midst of suffering and in the midst of challenge and in the midst of great harvest. All right.
I would just add that in Israel, that most of the Jewish believers are post-tribulation.
Yeah, and again, it's a hard thing to think that we'll be zapped. And let me say this. I have plenty of friends who believe in pre-trib rapture, plenty of my fellow workers in the Lord that are pre-tribbers. I've never divided over this. I want to emphasize the return of Jesus. Let's be ready for his return. Let's live our whole lives for him. But it's kind of an odd concept that we'll be suddenly pulled out and feasting in heaven while all the Jews are getting slaughtered on the earth. It's a bit of an odd concept to me. To me, with all respect for my friends who are pre-trib, and we'll talk about that on a future show, eschatology and different views, and you can explain why you hold to what you hold to, and we'll have a civil discussion about it. But, you know, there's a reading of the Bible that says all the bad stuff, all the curses, that's for the Jews. I will scatter you in my wrath. That's the Jews. And I will regather you in my love. That's the church. And we tend to read it like that. All the blessings are mine in Jesus. All the curses, that's for the Jews. So there's something that strikes me as similar to that we're out of here and we're feasting at this 7-year marriage supper in heaven while Jews are getting slaughtered on the earth. I mean, that's the theology. It just strikes me as odd, and I don't hold to that. However, let me say again, that I know that many of Israel's greatest friends today are pre-trib dispensationalist Christians, and I honor your desire to see the Lord return, and I honor your stance for Israel.
Absolutely. It's certainly nothing to divide over. We'll certainly know eventually which one is correct. But what I always ask myself, not just with this subject, Dr. Brown, but with healing and praying in the Spirit, I ask myself, if I locked myself in a room with the New Covenant, with the whole Bible, and there was nobody teaching me, would I ever walk out of after having read the New Covenant, would I leave that room and say, oh, it seems to me that 7 years before the return of the Lord, the church is raptured? I would never come up with that on my own. Somebody would have to teach that to me. And same with healing. If I walked in and I read the Bible, I'd come out saying, God heals, God does miracles. Someone would have to convince me that it's not in the Bible. And I think God has had the Bible written in a way that people who are not PhDs, like yourself, Dr. Brown, people like me, could understand the Bible.
ADHD rather than PhD.
Should I put that after my name, Ron Kanter, ADHD?
Hey, man, if it works. let's talk to Joel in Manhattan. Joel, I understand that you're an Orthodox Jewish man.
Yes, I am.
Yes, go for it, please.
Okay, I listened to some of your conversation, and I'm just trying to understand what it is that Ron feels that he has in terms of his relationship with God that we Orthodox Jews do not have. I fully assert and maintain that we definitely have a personal relationship with God. The fact of the matter is, we pray 3 times a day, whether we do it in private or in synagogue communally. Throughout the course of the day, we are constantly reciting brachot, blessings, on every single, practically every move that we make, mm-hmm. from every bite that we eat to coming out of the bathroom and praising God for giving us our health and the ability to function properly. We are God-conscious every moment of the day, from the moment we wake up in the morning when we say, Moda ani lefanecha, I thank you, God, for returning my soul to me, to the moment we go to sleep at night when we say, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, there is only one God, and we go to sleep with him in our minds. If that's not a personal relationship, I don't know what is.
Joel, with all due respect, I think you answered your own question. Everything is scripted out for you. From the time, can you imagine a marriage like that? Waking up in the morning and turning to your wife and saying, okay, I have to say three times right now, I love you. And then when she makes you your breakfast, it's time for me to say this blessing to my wife. That would not be a very natural relationship. What I'm talking about is...
Let me just stop you there, right there, Ron. I think of it more in terms of a father-son relationship. God says that you children, B'ni B'chori Yisrael, you are my children, O Israel, and God said that about all of Israel. And yes, when I grew up as a child, my father told me exactly what to do every moment of the day because he wanted to keep me out of trouble. He wanted to steer me along the right path so that I would be successful in life, in this world and the next. And God is my father, and therefore I value the fact that he tells me, you know, brush your teeth in the morning by saying a little blessing.
Make sure
you wipe yourself, you know, and you clean yourself properly, and you say a little blessing. So God is my father, and I love and value the fact that out of his love for me, he has charted a path for me for
all
what
right, so,
he wants
so Joel,
to do and how
yeah,
I
just,
live my
yeah,
life.
Yeah,
and
just,
I see
just,
nothing more
Joel,
greater Joel, and
just hang on one second. I'm very happy to let you talk, but I just need to interact, okay? I deal with and interact with Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox rabbis constantly, and I have great admiration for your zeal and for devotion, discipline, all of that. But you basically just explained part of the difference. In other words, you're asking what the difference is. I relate to God, yes, as Abba, as Father, but also as one that I'd run and sit on his lap, and he'd embrace me.
That's exactly what we do.
Okay, and I don't, and I have a relationship with him that doesn't need to be scripted out. You know, the Bible talks about Noach and Avraham, and you know the rabbinic tradition that
it, your father in the face and said, "I'm not going to do this anymore." And
Joel, did you call to ask a question or to preach to us? You ask a question.
I suppose both, but I'll let you answer now.
Yeah, well, just
because,
trying
because
to have.
Go ahead.
Just
I'll
trying
answer,
to have.
But I'd appreciate it if you would let me also get a word in. Go ahead.
Well, you've gotten. Tell you what, you go to my website later. Listen, you've got most of the words in. The fact of the matter is, nowhere in Scripture does it lay out a relationship like this. It tells us to. You don't see the psalmists doing this. They're pouring out their heart to God. For example, I kneel down before God, which is something that you don't do, as our forefathers did, and pour my heart out to Abba and relate to him, knowing that my sins have been forgiven, as in Psalm 32, knowing that I've been cleansed, that I have a clean conscience in the sight of God, not having to go through certain rituals and rites to get there. That's part of what Messiah has brought into the world in terms of that living relationship, that faith. And the reason, just so you understand, Joel, the reason that Ron and I talk about these things is not to put words in people's mouths. It's just the rabbis that we've talked to, and we've asked them about knowing God and walking with God. I told one ultra-Orthodox rabbi that what he described to me was like being at the door and knocking and wanting to get in, but he wasn't on the other side yet. But listen, we've got a break coming up. If you'll stay on the line, I will let you get a little bit more of your own word in on the other side of the break, right? So just stay around, Joel. And, you know, Ron, living in Israel, there are a lot of very religious Jews.
Yes.
Zealous?
Yeah, absolutely.
Prayerful?
Yes.
Studious?
For sure.
Scrupulous in many ways in their lives?
Like Joel.
Big families?
Yeah.
Devoted to their families?
Yes.
Praying, crying at the Wailing Wall at the Kotel?
Sure.
But would you dare say that you have something in God that they don't have?
Well, that's I hear the music, so
right, well,
I'll have to answer that on the other
you'll
side.
You'll have to answer. I set you up. You'll answer it on the other side. All right, we'll hear from Joel. Thank you, sir, for holding, and from Ron on the other side of the break.
It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it was Isaiah the prophet who said to our forefathers, L'chuna v'nivachecha yachdav, come and let's reason together. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. My special guest from Israel, Ron Cantor. And on the line with us, hopefully still there, Joel, Orthodox Jew from Manhattan. Hey, Joel, first I want to extend an invitation to you to call in, especially on Thursdays, which we try to devote to talking about Jewish-related subjects, so I can give you more time when I don't have a guest. But I want to let you get your last word in and then Ron's last word before we go on. So if you want to take exception to anything we were saying or respond, go for it, sir.
Sure, absolutely. You did set up Ron right before the break by just asking him, you know, basically it's an amorphous question. Do you believe you have something that they don't? And obviously he'll say yes. And if you would ask me that question, do I believe I have something that you don't? I'll say unequivocally yes. I have Torah. I have the mitzvot. I have loyalty and fealty to God's commandments as he commanded them, ageless commandments that he never said, that he said he would never, ever abrogate. And therefore I keep them the way that he gave them to Moses on Mount Sinai. And I have complete confidence that when I do keep those commandments and in good conscience, that God loves me and that I love him and that I have a clean conscience and everything you said, except that I'm listening to what God told me to do, whereas, I hate to say it, but you guys just aren't. You turn your back on it. I think you slapped God in the face, and I think that ultimately you will be taken to account for it.
Hey, well, Joel, I appreciate your clarity and warning. I would point out that you're 100% wrong in claiming that you're keeping the commandments the way Moses gave them. Moses would be absolutely shocked by the thousands of prayers that you pray, by the endless additions, by the traditions of men. And in fact, to be very, very, very clear, Torah tells us very plainly, do not add to these words. And the great majority of what you do through your day is added to Scripture. And when there's a conflict between what tradition says and Scripture says, you'll go the way of tradition, which is a great concern to me. But Joel, my phones are open to talk to folks like you, and I will do my best next time around to even give you a few more minutes to respond. But thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. I'm going to let Ron respond, and then we're running short on time. But thank you, sir.
You know, with all due respect, Joel, and with both of your answers, you described the difference. I don't really need to describe it. In your first answer, you said that the difference is that everything's scripted out for you. Your relationship with God from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. I explained that that is not a relationship. It wouldn't work with a wife. It wouldn't work with a mother, with a father-son relationship. Relationships are meant to be fun, spontaneous, energetic, not scripted out. The second thing I would say, Joel, and you, again, you said it in your last comment, that when I keep Torah, when I keep his commandments, his mitzvot, he loves me. Well, the truth is, Joel, God loves you even when you don't keep the commandments. And that is the nature of Yeshua. And the message that he brought is that we haven't kept the commandments. There's not one person on earth that has perfectly lived for God. The reason Yeshua came is because you and me and Dr. Brown, we are all, we have fallen short of God's standard that was set forth in Torah. Nobody has met that standard. And Yeshua came and he died in our place. He redeemed us, just like on Passover. If you were going to celebrate the original Passover, the first sons all over Egypt were dying, and only those who would take an innocent lamb and take the blood of that innocent lamb and put it on the doorpost of their homes would be spared this tragedy. In the same way, Yeshua shed his blood 2,000 years ago as the fulfillment of Isaiah the prophet, who said he would come, he would die for our sins, he would rise from the dead, and that blood covers our hearts. That's what John, his cousin, said to him after, I don't know, 30 years of living together as cousins. He says, behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world.
All right, and Ron, as you have preached the gospel, again, my phone lines are open. Most weeks I don't have a guest. My phone lines are open for Jewish people that want to differ with me about Jesus, Yeshua, and I'll take a good part of a program to do it. But Joel, thanks for calling in. I know you have more to say. I'll do my best to give you an opportunity to say more in the future. Just out of curiosity, and we're short on time, I will be on another hour. No, you won't be hearing me on your station, but don't worry. You can catch up later online, askdrbrown.org. If you click on the Line of Fire later today, you'll be able to catch all of the programming, and we will talk more about life in Israel as a Jewish believer. But Ron, real quick, does Sabbath have any meaning for you and your family?
Absolutely.
Actually,
yes.
On a weekly basis, you mean?
On a weekly basis.
Oh, okay. And what about like the High Holy Days?
Yes. Now, obviously, I don't celebrate Yom Kippur or
Day of Atonement to look for atonement.
I don't observe it the same way Joel would. I believe that through Yeshua, I've been forgiven. But it's a day that God set forever and ever, and we're still in forever.
So you will fast or pray those days or pray
yes.
for the... Okay, and then do you build the sukkah?
I didn't this year, but normally we do.
So in other words, as a Jew living in Israel, you're living
as
a Jew.
In fact, I built a sukkah. I remember when my kids were young. I'm not sure how much time we have, but I built a sukkah when my kids were young, and our neighbors were Palestinian.
Ooh.
And they were on their back porch smoking from the hookah, nargila, we call it in Israel, and they're watching
you're
me.
In the sukkah, and they were smoking the hookah. But anyway, go ahead.
And I was building this, and as I'm building this, and for those of our listeners who don't know, this is a booth for the Feast of Tabernacles, and it commemorates that we lived in booth for 7 days, or we lived for 40 years, but we do it for 7 days to commemorate. I understood that I was without words. I had a message for those guys, Palestinians watching me build this little booth saying, hey, the God of Israel is the God of all the earth. He brought the Jews back to Israel. So yes, these things are very important to us.
And your congregation would celebrate the feasts and holy days, not to try to prove something to the Jewish community, but because you're Jews, this is part of your life.
Because it's in the Bible.
Friends, you need to find out more about Ron's ministry, the work that he's doing in Israel. He's a great communicator. He has a clear message, and he's taking people out to the nations. Go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's a link to Ron's website. You can find out more about his story. That's askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. When you're on the Ask Dr. Brown website, especially if you're a Jewish person listening, well, Joel had some interesting points. What about this? Go to the Real Messiah right on our website, realmessiah.org. AskDrBrown.org, Real Messiah. You get there about 100 different ways, all kinds of great Jewish resources. Answer your questions. I've written 5 volumes answering Jewish objections. Take hold of those. And my daily exhortation about a work, an important book, that by God's grace can help bring an awakening to the conscience of our nation. A Queer Thing Happened to America. Go to Amazon.com. Order your copy today. You won't regret it. A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's relevant. Folks in Israel were super supportive when they heard we were doing this. They said, man, this is crucial. In fact, they even donated money to help us publish this book because they said the message is so important. Here's my bottom line, friends. Jesus, the Jew, has not forsaken his people. Jesus, the Jew, is building his messianic congregation around the world and in Israel. Yeshua, the Jew, opens the door for Jew and Gentile alike, that through him we can come to know and follow and love the God of Israel. Yeshua the Jew is calling to you today.
Change the world. Change the world.
So you're a brand new Jewish believer in Jesus. You're just a teenager. Your dad sends you to talk to the rabbis and the counter-missionaries. What do you say to them? And who, pray tell, comes to your rescue?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I'm wondering about something here. Is Jewish blood as valuable as Gentile blood? Is Jewish blood as precious in the eyes of the world as non-Jewish blood? When Jews are slaughtered, does it produce less outrage than when non-Jews are slaughtered? When you find out that the sole fatality of the Jerusalem bus bombing yesterday was actually a Scottish woman and Bible translator who was there in Israel studying, does that make it more painful than if it was just Jews or Israelis? Is there a reason that the massacre in the middle of the night of a Jewish family, including 2-3-month-old baby, I mean, you're talking about heart stabbed, the neck sliced, and rabbi and his friend, religious Jew and his family sleeping at night in bed, getting butchered. Is that less important to the world? Seems it didn't get a lot of coverage. Michael Brown here with a special guest, Ron Cantor, Jewish believer in Jesus. We've been friends for many, many years. We'll talk about his story and how we met when he was with the Counter Missionaries. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you know, I'm wondering out loud about news coverage. I know stuff's happening in Libya. I know stuff's happening in Japan. But why was it that this massacre in Israel got so little world attention? Why is it that even the bomb blast in Jerusalem seems to get less attention than if it was happening in other countries? Ron, do you think that I am off the wall and even speculating about these things? Do you think that perhaps Jewish blood being shed is not as important to people as other blood being shed?
Well, let's just imagine if I somehow jumped over the fence into Gaza and I went into an Arab family's house in Gaza, and I, as a Jew, as an Israeli, murdered the mother and father and their children. Do you think that would make world headlines?
In their sleep.
In their sleep, absolutely. Do you think AP and all the other news outlets throughout the world would pick that up?
All right, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. On Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown. What about Ron's question? To answer my question, it's a good Jewish thing, answer a question with a question. A Jew, all right, a Jew slithers his way into Gaza by night, gets around barricades, whatever it is, gets into a village where people are living peacefully in the middle of the night, in cold blood, murders, sleeping in bed, mother, father, and three of the children, stabs little baby in the heart, I mean, rips people up with a knife, kills five. Do you think that would be world-shaking headlines? You think people would be calling for the end of modern Israel or all kinds of boycotts, sanctions? There'd be outrage.
Not only would there be outrage if we did that to a terrorist.
Uh-huh.
When we actually go after somebody who has blood on their hands, who has killed people in the past, and we take that person out, it is international news. But when a Jewish family is slaughtered, you can finally hear anything on the major networks or major radio outlets throughout the world.
Yeah, friends, just something I want you to think about. We are focusing on Israel and the Jewish people as we do on Thursdays with my guest, Ron Cantor of MessiahsMandate.org. So if you've got a question, about life in Israel today, if you've got a question, what's it like to be a Jewish believer living in Israel today? If you've got a question about the theology, you know, I think the church has replaced Israel. I don't think that Israel has a right to be in the land. You want to talk about that? We'll take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. Whole lot to discuss today on the Line of Fire. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire as we focus on Israel and the Jewish people. There's always controversy when you talk about Israel and the Jewish people, and it's amazing to go around the world to see how much controversy there is. If you think American reporting is sometimes bad and biased against Israel, go watch BBC in England or CNN World News in some other country. It is just openly anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian slant, almost without apology. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. I'm here with my guest, Ron Cantor. We've known each other. We're comparing notes like 27 or so years, almost half of my life, more than half of his life. And Ron's doing a lot of important things in Israel and in the nations. We'll tell you more about it. But just back to the beginning, we met, Ron, you were 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You were a fairly new believer in Jesus, Yeshua. you agreed with your folks to meet with some ultra-Orthodox rabbis in Brooklyn, and of course you knew the Lord had changed your life, shared your testimony. They at least seemed moved by it, but they're hitting you with all this stuff. I mean, how are you going to have answers? You're saved a year,
right?
You know, and you're not a Hebrew scholar, and how are you going to have answers? So the fellow that helped lead you to the Lord called me. He was a student of mine on the island, said, hey, I got this 18-year-old guy, needs some help. And so we talked by phone. That's how we got to meet.
Right.
And you got rescued from from folks that wanted to.
I still remember being in that Manhattan hotel each day, coming home and calling you up and saying, what do I say to these guys?
And you know, again, our answer was not, well, Ron, you just tell them they're stupid and keep saying the name of Jesus like 100 times. Just every time they try to give you an argument from Scripture, just say, Jesus, 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 Jesus. No, no, what we said was...
Actually, I said Yeshua.
Yeshua. What we said was, look, there are answers. They're good answers. Here's how to approach this. Here's how to answer this. And you know, the interesting thing in my own life is I've been in this now for almost, you know, going on 40 years. The end of this year, be 40 years in the Lord. I decided, Ron, years ago, that I was going to take the objections head on. In other words, rather than just, you know, try to, well, I have got my faith and I can't let it be challenged. I thought if there's an objection and there's any seriousness and weight to that objection, I need to take it seriously. And as I did, the more I studied, it's like, wow, not only is my experience real, not only is my experience real, but we're on the side of truth. Living in Israel, been there 7.5 years. You spent other time mm-hmm. in Israel. You have an Israeli wife, so that's gotten you connected to the culture.
Yes,
long before. Tell us about the sense of pressure, the sense of every families having to be kids in the military and all this. What's life like in Israel? First, just in general, then we'll talk about it as a believer, but specifically because of the terrorists, the pressure, Hamas, Hezbollah, sure. And, you know, Iran saying they're going to do that. You're living there. How does it affect you?
Well, before I share that, let me just give a shout out to Richmond, Virginia, my home city that has two teams in the NCAA tournament playing tomorrow night. So go Spiders, go Rams. Very exciting that I'm in America because I'm not here very often during this time. So greetings to all my friends in Richmond. But in answer to your question, Dr. Brown, It's very intense. It's not just intense because of the threat of terror, and obviously we saw yesterday a bomb blowing up at a bus stop, amazingly only killing one person, but injuring scores. But not just because of that, not even just because of the threat of war, but Israel, it's hard to explain unless you live there, but it's just constant pressure. The roads are smaller. Just driving to the grocery store can be a pressurized deal.
But then it's relaxing when you're in the grocery store.
No, then you get in the grocery store and you're in line and the person rams you in the tuchus. You know what a tuchus is?
Yiddish for backside.
with their cart. There's just no respect for space in Israel. People button.
But then they line up gracefully, right? There's no cutting. And
no, but my favorite one was when... we were in line and a woman actually put her cart in line and then would go get her groceries little by little and throw them in because she didn't want to wait in line. So by the time she'd get her, of course, then I don't always walk in the fruit of the spirit. So I moved her cart and then she came back and yelled at me and I said, doesn't matter. And another great story was there was you got the 10 item line and there's a guy in front of me with like 20 items. And I said, you know what? I don't care. I'm not going to say anything. That's not a big deal. But I knew because I'm Israeli and I live there, I knew that the people around me, once they noticed that they would jump on him. So sure enough, within about 10 seconds, somebody says something. Then the couple in front next to East, well, you know, it's not like I have 40 items. It's only 20. We always reason, you know, no, it's 10 items. And then they're yelling at each other. And finally, you know, in defeat, he takes his 20 items to the.
So he had to move.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
All right. These things are kind of lighthearted. They're funny. I remember when we first came to Israel in 86, our first trip there. We knew we had arrived, went to baggage claim, and people were pushing and shoving. One guy went to grab his bags, and he pushed this lady to get to him. So they start shoving him, and I thought, we've arrived. But that stuff we can laugh about.
In all seriousness, over the first time it's funny, the second time it's funny, and then suddenly you just can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so your typical Israeli is just... a moment or two away from exploding in frustration. because of the daily grind.
All right, but what about, so that's real, the price of living, cost of living, all that. Are you all warmongers? Was it like a big exciting day when you sent your daughter off, your oldest daughter off to the army?
Yes, I dressed up like Rambo that day. I took my shirt off, painted my face, and put bullets across my chest.
Because that's all Israelis are warmongers like that, right?
I'm one of the weaker ones. You should see my neighbors. No, absolutely not. Anybody who lives in Israel and then they hear a description of Israelis like that, just know how ridiculous. Are we proud to serve in the army? Absolutely. And when a young man goes off to fight for his country in Israel, it's considered an honor. But nobody in Israel wants war. We want peace with our neighbors. I've never met anybody in 7.5 years of living there that just wants to go out and kill Arabs. Everyone I meet, just if anything, we're naive that we keep believing that Islamic fundamentalist radicals will actually make peace with us.
I'm going to give you a statement. Tell me if you think this is an overstatement. If the Palestinians put down their weapons, there would be no more war. If the Israelis put down their weapons, there would be no more Israel.
I think that would be a correct statement.
So aren't there a lot of left-leaning Israelis and that are critical of the government?
Sure.
Right. And how is
we have our Michael Moores. We have our Dennis Kucinich's. We have people like that in Israel who, no matter what the terrorists do against us, they're constantly saying, if you just sit down with them, if you just reason with them. Listen, I remember being a young man in 1991 when the whole Madrid conference, you know, and Shamir was the prime minister back then. That's when we started sitting down with Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority. 20 years later, Dr. Brown, not much progress.
Let's talk about something that happened recently in territories under the Palestinians. Occupied territories and okay. There was a famous terrorist, bomber, took many lives. Woman, they've named a square after her. They've
sure.
So I mean, Americans just need to understand this. This would be like, just to use an example that we're familiar with, that say Iran would say that, you know, to memorialize Osama bin Laden, or Saudi Arabia say. Okay, because mm-hmm. he's got Saudi roots. Osama bin Laden's square in Saudi Arabia, or Osama bin Laden's street. And these are the people that we're supposed to be negotiating with. And
let's take it a step further.
With.
Imagine if you went into Oklahoma City and you saw a monument to Timothy McVeigh.
Uh-huh.
That would be, how outrageous would that be? Well, that's what these people do. They honor people like that. This family that was butchered just a few weeks ago, literally, I mean, a baby, a knife through the heart, literally, and a throat slit, butchered. The next day in the Palestinian territories, they were handing out candy on the streets, which is how they celebrate a great victory.
And what happens when you get reports in Israel that the Israeli army fighting in Gaza, fighting to protect Israel from constantly being bombed, that you hear that maybe a family was killed or some children were killed by the Israeli army? What's the reaction in Israel? You guys dancing?
It's tragic.
You're not dancing in the streets.
Like I wrote yesterday, in 7.5 years of living in Israel, we've never had one parade to celebrate the killing of an Arab, even a terrorist. We don't, you know, if the Israeli army today took out the worst, most vilified terrorist, we would be grateful, but we wouldn't be handing out candy. We wouldn't have a parade. We wouldn't. It's a totally different mentality. And so when an innocent family becomes collateral damage because of us defending ourselves, Israelis are traumatized. We don't want that.
Yeah, and I talk to friends. They've got family members serving in the military. I remember going into Beirut, you know, years back in the war with Lebanon, and they're saying it's so difficult because our lives are so much more at risk because we have to follow all these procedures to make sure that we don't hurt civilians. That's the reality. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk more about living in Israel, in particular as Jews who follow Yeshua, Jesus, living in Israel. If you've got a question for Ron Cantor, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, or go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's a link to Ron's website. You can find out more about his ministry.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, if you care about God's purposes in the earth, if you care about Jesus' revolution changing society, I say you need to care about Israel, not just as some prophetic time clock in the Middle East, but as something very dear to God's heart and to God's purposes. I would challenge you by saying, if you want to fully have God's heart, you must also have his heart for Israel, the salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in compromise, in a church in chaos. A society in chaos in a church all too often in compromise, which is why you need a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My special guest in the studio here as I'm broadcasting live from WAVA Studios in Washington, D.C. area. Ron Cantor, askdrbrown.org is the place to be. For more information, click on the Line of Fire. Ron, there was a question a caller just had who wanted to know, are the Philistines of the Bible and the Palestinians the same people?
That's actually a great question, because you got to wonder, where did the Palestinian people come from? They weren't around in the 1800s, the 1700s, the 60s. There's no history of the Palestinian people, but they do have the same name as the ancient Philistines. And how they got, so in short, no, they're not the same people. But how did they get that name? Well, the way ancient cultures or ancient kingdoms and empires worked is when they would conquer another city, another country, they would then disperse those people. They would do everything they could to destroy the ethnic identity of those people. And that's why you don't run into any Hittites or Jebusites in the grocery store, because they were conquered and they were dispersed. Well, the Roman army, who did that to many other nations, sought to do that to the Jewish people, first in 70 when we were conquered, but then we rose back up. So in 135, not only did they conquer us again, not only did they seek to disperse us to other countries, but they changed the name. The Romans, now, the Romans were not Arabs, the Romans were, well, Roman, and they changed the name from ancient Judea to Philistia or Palestine.
And they did it in a derogatory, mocking way, and also to destroy identity.
They wanted to destroy the ethnic identity of a Jewish people. And just as a side note, this is very interesting. There has never been a nation that has been separated from its geographical homeland for more than 200 years and survived as a identifiable people group other than the nation of Israel that survived for 2,000 years. So, getting back to the question, when you get to the modern day that we live in right now, the Palestinians are merely Arabs like Syrians. Not that there's anything wrong with being an Arab. God has plans for the Arab people. God loves the Arab people, and we certainly pray for their salvation. But there is no culture that is distinctly Palestinian. There's no language.
Hang on. You're saying a whole lot here. I know for a fact that there was a newspaper in 1930s, early 1940s, that was called the Palestinian Post.
Correct.
And I know that there was such a thing as, in like the 20s, as a Palestinian orchestra.
That is correct.
How can you say that there's no Palestinian identity then?
Because, and that's another great question, Dr. Brown. That's why you have the PhD after your name. But the reason those the newspaper and the orchestra were named Palestinian is because anybody, Jew, Arab, from Mars or Jew, didn't matter where you were from. If you lived in that region of the world, you said, hey, I'm a Palestinian.
Ah, but let's go a step further. The Palestinian Post was known as the Jerusalem Post.
It became the Jerusalem Post.
Right,
the Palestinian Post was owned by
and
Jews.
And the Palestinian Orchestra, was Jews.
Exactly.
In other words, if there was a Palestinian people, it was Jews.
Because
right. you had, so we know that through the generations, even some for hundreds of years, there have been Arabs who have lived in what the Romans called Palestine and what the world knows as Palestine.
Correct.
All right. So they've lived there, but they never had a Palestinian flag.
I wouldn't even say they lived there. Many of them migrated from Saudi Arabia, from Syria, from Egypt, from other areas. But no, they have never had any ethnic identity connected with the word Palestine.
Oh, okay, so
flag, no language, no culture.
All right, so everybody here born in America, you say of yourself, you're an American, right?
Right.
Okay. And then you talk to someone born in England, you know, I'm a Brit or I'm English. Okay, or someone born in Canada, they live in Canada, I'm a Canadian. So what you're saying is that Arabs living in what was called Palestine, living in Jerusalem or some other part of the land, say in 1850 or in 1930 or even 1960, they did not, if you said, who are you, they would not have said, I'm a Palestinian in terms of their national heritage identity.
Absolutely not.
And there's a great quote from Waleed Shubat, who's a former terrorist and now passionate right. follower of Jesus and lover of Israel. He says, I was a Jordanian, and in the Six-Day War in 1967, I wake up next day, I'm a Palestinian.
Right. Well, you know, what happened is that, you know, even before the Six-Day War, when Israel was able to retake Jerusalem, and I might add that we did not attack Jerusalem, Jordan attacked us, thinking that they were going to get more land during the Six-Day War. They didn't want Egypt and Syria, who were broadcasting on their radio stations that they were winning the war. Of course, they were losing the war. We ended up with Jerusalem. But even years before that, Yasser Arafat, in 1964, created the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. So he wanted to liberate Palestine. Well, you know, the territories, as we call them today, the occupied territories, they were under Egyptian control, Gaza, and the West Bank was under Jordanian control. So you got to ask yourself, what Palestine did he want to liberate?
Exactly.
Israel.
Okay. We've only got like a minute before the break. We may have to start this and then continue on the other side. But if how many Arabs live in Israel now? 1.5 million? Like
Israeli Arabs, about 1.5 million.
Okay.
Plus those in the territories.
How would they feel if the Palestinian Authority or Hamas took over the government and they could be under the PA or under Hamas?
Well, let's put it this way. At this point, an Israeli Arab can go outside of his house. He can curse the government. He can burn a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu. He can say anything he wants to say, and no one is going to do a thing to him.
Can his wife be a feminist?
No.
Well, okay, but in Israeli culture, I mean.
Well, it depends. There are feminist Arab.
Okay, but that's the Arab thing. That's not the Israeli thing.
What I'm saying is that in Arab households in Israel,
I understand
women have not fully.
But Israeli culture, you can be a feminist to the hill. You have gay pride events.
Yes.
I mean, look, obviously we're not boasting about gay pride events in Israel, but it struck both of us as utterly ironic during Operation Cast Lead, where Israel, after years of thousands of bombs dropping on their civilians, says, Okay, we're going to do something. After giving Gaza over with no condition, we're going to do something. We're going to fight back. And their goal is, again, to kill the terrorists. That was the goal, and to stop them from being able to kill their people. So all these protests, marches in America, and who's you got feminists, gay activists, and those marching against Israel. It's like, go to Gaza and live under Hamas and see what happens. All right, if you've got a question for Ron Cantor, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. And we come back, focus on living in Israel as a Jewish believer in Jesus.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, Israel seems to be the center of the universe for many Christians. I would dare say that the fact that God chose out Abram and through his seed, the seed of Abraham, brought blessing to the world, and the fact that our Messiah is a Jew who will one day return to Jerusalem, and that God's promises are being fulfilled in front of our eyes there, that would make it important to all of us. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Online Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. By the way, all through the day, we're posting new material, new information, articles of interest to you, new posts, things that we're doing. So if you haven't joined our Facebook community, it's actually, if you're going to be on Facebook, it's a good place to be. Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. It is my delight to have in the studio with me today Ron Cantor. Ron and I knew each other since I was 28 and he was 18. Think, man, I was the old one when we met. I was 28, you're 18. Now these hundreds of years later, decades later, we're friends going on the Lord. Ron and his wife, Alana, she's an Israeli, native-born Israeli. They live in Israel, raised their three daughters there. And Ron and I are talking about Israel, about the Jewish people, about life in the land. Ron, it's one thing to be a Jewish follower of Jesus living in America. It's another thing to be a Jewish follower of Jesus living in Israel. Now, recently there's been some positive press, but it's not always like that. What does the society think? Do they know you guys exist? Do they understand who you are? Are you some kind of cult?
More and more they know that we exist. There's more and more newspaper articles, and I might add that they tend to be more and more positive because the Israeli left, who typically journalists and writing in newspapers, they tend to be a little bit more fair-minded in terms of not just believing that we're a cult or that we're trying to brainwash people. And there's animosity against the secular Israelis and the religious Israelis. So if the religious Israelis, the Orthodox rabbis and Lubavitch Hasidic, and they're telling everyone to stay away from us, well, liberal, secular, left-leaning Jewish Israelis don't like to be told what they can and cannot do. So they want to say, well, if you're telling us to stay away from them, maybe we should try and find out who they are.
Now, is there persecution of any kind against Messianic Jews in Israel?
There is persecution. I would say that it's not like the persecution that we would experience, say, in Iran or in Saudi Arabia by any means, not even close. Maybe the most publicized and tragic case was a few years ago. We just celebrated Purim a few weeks ago. 3 years ago on Purim, a young boy, Ami Ortiz, living in the West Bank settlement of Ariel.
So it's a teenager, 16,
15
maybe?
At the time, opened up it's traditional to send packages of candy and food to each other and to give gifts to the poor. Well, there was a package at his doorstep, which he thought was a care package that would be normal to receive on Purim. He opened it up. It blew up in his face. Miraculously.
It blew up his apartment. I mean, it ripped up the refrigerator. Yeah. I mean, just ripped up his house.
If you see
apartment.
The pictures, it's unreal that he survived. If there wasn't a young woman who was a medic walking by at that time who did an emergency tracheotomy on him, he would have drowned in his own blood right there. Even in the hospital, the doctors told his father, David, that he probably isn't going to make it through the night. And if he does make it, he'll lose his extremities, his arms and legs. He's now the center on his basketball team. That's 3 years later. Nothing short of a miracle, but the miracle, sadly, isn't the point. The point is that someone tried to kill him because he was a Messianic Jew. And now those incidents are few and far between. The guy who did it is a lunatic. He's been captured. He's on trial. But for the most part, no, we don't receive. I live free in Israel as a believer in Yeshua.
All right. Hey, good to know that. We come back. We're going to talk about life in Israel. Take your calls. Oh, here's a question. What's the difference between a Jew and an Israelite? Coming your way on the other side of the break, right here on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, not just Dr. Michael Brown. Dr. Michael Brown with my guest, Mr. Reverend Rabbi, honorary doctor, to make an honorary doctorate, Ron Cantor, in the States for a little while, living in Israel. Jewish believer in Jesus Yeshua with his Israeli wife and three daughters. How many have been in the army now?
Two.
Two. Wow.
One is in the army as we speak.
All right. So this is real life. It is necessity if these people are to survive. That's real life. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you've got a question for Ron or for me about Jewish faith, about living in Israel, especially living in Israel, Ron is the man to ask since he lives there and I don't. Our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Hey, before we get into the question about difference between being a Jew and an Israelite. And before we get into question, another caller wants to know about President Obama and what would seem to be pro-Palestinian in certain ways, or, you know, how he's perceived. You know, President Bush was also arguing for a two-state solution, President Obama even more strongly. But just tell us about this initiative that you've had, Isaiah 2, based on the idea of the word of the Lord going forth from Jerusalem to the nations.
Sure.
Money flows into Israel all the time, and we need more flowing in to help Jewish believers there. And I'm just going to deviate one second to say this. If you are sending money, please hear me. If you respect me, if you listen to my voice at any level as a Jewish believer in Jesus, if you are sending money to support Israel, send it to Jewish believers in the land. Send it to those who are the Israel within Israel. Send it to those who would be the poor in the land, according to Paul. There are great organizations like Barry and Botcha Siegel and Joseph's Warehouse and different ones that are doing humanitarian work. There's an important work that Ron is doing now to get young Israelis out into the nations, and the fruit is great. So I respect and appreciate other Christian Zionist organizations, but the money that you give will go right into the hands of secular Israelis, sometimes even Orthodox Israelis, which is fine, but not where you want to be putting your money as a believer.
Well, it's not fine if they end up funding the people who are resisting us.
Exactly. If it goes, say, to an Orthodox Jewish organization that's teaching kids to stay away from Messianic Jews and not to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. And hang on, we're going to totally deviate here for a moment here. Oh boy, let's get a little bit of hot water. There is a big TV show, it's all over Christian TV, with a rabbi. I trust he's a very sincere man, doing a lot of humanitarian good.
He cries on TV.
Yechiel Eckstein. And Christians send a lot of money. I mean, I would take 1/100th of the money that his ministry gets, and we get on more radio stations all over America. Okay, a lot of money goes into his organization. And what I've read, Ron, is something like 80% of the people that give think that he's a Jewish believer doing Jewish outreach. He doesn't say that. He doesn't get on the air and say that, but he's an Orthodox rabbi. And he opposes Jewish believers in Jesus.
He is against Messianic Judaism, and I don't know him. I don't know his heart. I'm sure that he loves his people, and he's
and the money's not going in his pocket to make him rich. It's
I believe he's genuine in what he's doing, but he is against Messianic Judaism, and he's a smart man by creating an organization called the International Fellowship of Jews and Christians or something like that. Hey, we're all in this together. But if you pin him down on his theology, you know, you can't say Christians are great and wonderful and yet believe that their theology is crazy.
Yeah. And so, friends, if you're going to send money to help Israel, send it to Jewish believers within the land. Notice I didn't tell you, send me all the money, though I said I'd gladly take a tiny little chunk of Rabbi Eckstein's budget and we'll use it to do Jewish outreach. But sow into the land. So there is money that comes in to support workers in the land.
Right.
But there's not always the concept of here we are as Jews, we should be a light to the nation. So God put something in your heart based on the word in Isaiah 2, and you've taken now young Israelis, teenagers, young people at college age, taken them. Where? And what have they done?
Well, it all goes back to an opportunity I had several years ago. And if people want the full story, they can go to our website, messiahsmandate.org, and there is a banner that shares the whole history of the Isaiah 2 initiative. Isaiah said that the word of the Lord would go forth from Zion and from Jerusalem. And furthermore, he says in chapter 42 and 49 that we are called to be a light to the nations. It just... While I was on this amazing trip with Reinhard Bonnke and seeing literally hundreds of thousands of people professing faith in Yeshua in Nigeria, I received an invitation to come back to Nigeria. As I began to pray about this invitation, I had no peace, and I said, "Lord, why don't I have peace about this?" And I don't always hear the voice of the Lord so clearly, but it was one of those times that I just knew God spoke to me. He said, "Ron, if you come back to Nigeria by yourself, it'll bless Nigeria, but it won't touch Israel, and your calling is in Israel. However, if you go back to Israel and you gather a group of Israeli believers, young adults, bring them back and let them do ministry, not just you preaching, but let them preach, let them testify, let them pray for the sick. Not only will you be blessing Nigeria, but you will be sending them back to Israel on fire. And instantly I knew it was God. I gathered some leaders together. They bore witness. And before we knew it, we had a team that in December of 2009, we took our first trip. And after five nights of ministry, we had 104,000 decision cards.
And how many were on your team?
18.
And what were the age ranges roughly?
I would say, not including me, which throws everything off, between 17 and maybe mid-20s.
So they got to see in front of their eyes all these Africans coming to faith. In front of their eyes, God touching people, changing people's lives.
And miracles, blind eyes opening, the lame walking. One fellow who came in a wheelchair, a Muslim, two of our guys prayed for him, nothing happened. Prayed for him again, nothing happened. Third time, they're already thinking about how do we gracefully get not pray for him anymore. He jumps out of his wheelchair.
Muslim
guy starts running around in circles, runs right up on the stage. I give him the microphone. He renounces Islam, gives his life to Yeshua, and he's walking.
Wow. So they see this. Now they come back to Israel. Has it changed them?
Absolutely. I remember as soon as we got back, different ones telling me that people they knew that were sick, they wanted to go pray for them. Others, just a whole new sense of boldness and a confirmation in their own hearts, this thing is real. I saw the power of God. I saw demons leaving people. I saw people...
There's no more demons today, Ron. I mean, please, let's not...
We don't have time
demons
for
are
that.
All gone away.
Did they leave? Where did they go?
I've always wondered about that. So they've come back changed. You're taking another trip soon?
May 8th through the 16th, we're taking another team of 11 to Nigeria, this time to an area called Hong, Nigeria. We have people there organizing it. We're expecting even bigger crowds this time.
Tremendous.
And God's going to show up and not just bless Nigeria, but he's raising up Israeli evangelists, Israeli pastors, and we're preparing for revival in Israel.
Let it be. That's messiahsmandate.org. If you have a hard time figuring out how to spell that, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the line of fire. Ron Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R. That sounds like Eric Cantor in the House of Representatives, strong conservative. Any relationship?
Yeah, he's my cousin. We grew up in Richmond, and he's now the majority leader.
He's probably listening to this
very
broadcast.
I'm sure he's an avid listener to your program.
All right. Hey, if you're listening, Representative Cantor, we appreciate the work that you're doing. I'm on, friends, 2 hours a day. Some of you get a half hour of the program, some 1 hour. But on our website, AskDrBrown.org, if you click on the line of fire, you can listen to all the past broadcasts. And this last hour, I got a call. I want to be as straight as I can with you. When God opened the door for me to be on different stations to expand our network, we've been on 3 years to expand our network, one of the cities I wanted to get into was New York City. I felt that was of critical importance. In fact, we added an extra hour a day so we could speak specifically to folks in New York City. And I felt I was convinced that religious Jews would listen and religious Jews would call in. Now, look, this is only our second week on the air in New York City and for many of the affiliates now hearing my voice. But I want you to know we had our first Orthodox Jewish caller today who wanted to challenge what we had to say. That tells me people are listening. Would you hold our hands up? Would you stand with us? Your gifts help us be on the air. No hype, I'm just talking straight to you. If you want to help us reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, here's a way to do it where we will also send you a token of appreciation. Stay with us.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, friends, I honestly believe that as the church cut itself off from its Jewish roots, as it became a separated religion, as in fact it painstakingly separated itself from Israel in different ways, to that extent it cut itself off from life source and opened the door to many theological and practical errors. And as the followers of Jesus rightly connect to Jewish roots, I don't mean Gentiles becoming Jews, but recognizing the roots of the faith, there is health and life that comes from it. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on the Line of Fire. I may have time for another call or two, 866-34-TRUTH. It's interesting how many folks call but couldn't stay on or didn't want to be on. It's not like we got some service where we're going to find out who they are. There's Muslim terrorists are going to go kill us.
Part of the Patriot Act.
Anyway, my guest in the studio with me, Ron Cantor. Ron, folks that listen to my broadcast regularly know that I am not a President Obama basher. I respect the office of the president. I'm grieved by many of the decisions and directions our president goes. I pray for him, but I don't put my trust in the administration, the government itself. My trust is in God. I have been more grieved over things that Mr. Obama's done in terms of moral issues and Israel-related issues than Mr. Bush. It has nothing to do with color. It has nothing to do with party. It has to do with issues. Those are the issues to me.
Right.
I understand that your average Israeli, from polls I've read, does not feel particularly confident that President Obama is with them or supportive, and seem to feel much more secure with President Bush, even though President Bush also opted for a two-state solution and had friends in Saudi Arabia. So am I misreading that? What's your perception living there?
No, you're not misreading that at all. Recent polls have his approval ratings in Israel just under 5%.
Right, 4% was the figure I saw.
Yeah, and the reason for that is, you know, a lot of people ask, is President Obama, is he a Christian? Is he a Muslim? You know, what is his? He's neither, in my opinion. I wrote a long piece after quite a bit of research. He's not religious at all. I don't think that he believes in Allah. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in Yeshua. He's a humanist. He's a secular humanist. And he probably believes that Israel is a get rid of Israel and you solve the Middle East problem. Now, I don't think he's advocating for getting rid of Israel, but he is no friend of the Jewish people, I don't think. When Prime Minister Netanyahu came to visit him during his first visit here, he was snubbed. He was not treated like a head of state.
He was dissed.
There you go. That's the right word for it. He was disrespected in a horrible way. He was left in a room while President Obama went and had dinner with his family. It's unheard of that a head of state or an American president would treat the head of state of one of our best friends, if not our best friends in the past, in this way. President Bush, on the other hand, while I was in agreement with everything he did, he was the first president to say that Israel should not return to 1967 borders. He was the first president to say that it's unrealistic that even in a two-state solution that Israel is going to have to keep some of the land conquered in 1967 for her own security.
Are you concerned, Ron, that it seems that there's a movement within the church, perhaps left-wing evangelicals, I'm sure many sincere people and committed Christians, that they seem to be espousing a theology that Israel does not have a right to the land, that their whole siding with justice would be, we're siding with the oppressed Palestinians, and Israel is an apartheid state, and they've built this horrific wall, and it's terrible what they're doing. Do you see that rising? Does that concern you?
Well, it concerns me, but not for me, for them. They're the ones making themselves an enemy of God. God says, if you touch Israel, you're touching the apple of my eye. He said, I will bless those who bless you. I'll curse those who curse you. So I'm not worried. I feel safe in Israel. I feel secure that I've read the Bible. I know how it ends, and it's not going to be easy, but he's coming back to Israel to set up his eternal kingdom in that land. The nations of the world will come to Israel and worship Yeshua, Zechariah 14. My concern is for these theologians, and I believe what you have in a lot of these denominations is that left-wing liberal theologians have hijacked the leadership. I don't think they represent the view of all of their constituency. For instance, I have many Presbyterian friends who, you know, they go to a Presbyterian church, but they don't know that Presbyterians are supposed to believe that God has no longer has a plan for Israel. They love Israel. They support Israel. But the official doctrine, not only is it replacement, meaning that the church has replaced Israel, but there's call in all these, so many of these denominations, of divestment from Israel.
Right. So pull out any economic investment, anything, pull out support. Ron, 1 minute. Why is it important for believers to be standing with the Jewish people, with Israel today?
It's important because you want to be on God's side on any given subject.
But Israel's not perfect.
Israel is not perfect, but she is, her creation was God fulfilling his covenant that he would bring the Jews back to the land of Israel, recreate them as a nation, and there would be a revival there. But not only is Israel not perfect, or rather, let me say it this way, Israel obviously isn't perfect, but are the nations perfect? You know, Iran, are they perfect? Libya, perfect? United States, are we perfect?
Uh-huh.
The issue
so
is not perfection.
Why the double standard?
Exactly.
Right. So listen, friends, Ron could go on for hours and hours. Go to his website, Messiah's.
I might just do that after you leave. Yeah, I'm just going to go on for hours and hours.
Hey, friend, everyone, program directors, change everything. Ron Cantor will go on for hours and hours, but perhaps it will not be over the airwaves. Messiahsmandate.org is his website. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the line of fire for a link there and for other relevant resources. I want to say something very interesting happened to me when I was in Israel in November. I did an outreach lecture at Hebrew University, did some ministry, some leadership teaching and other things. And I spent some time with friends there in Israel. And when we were talking about what I was doing, I happened to mention, which I talked about this every day, I happened to mention I wrote this book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, that's coming out. Two of the major conversations I had completely shifted, where friends I hadn't seen in years wanted to talk to me about that issue because it's an issue in Israel with gay pride events in Jerusalem, with little children in elementary school being taught pro-gay curriculum, with Tel Aviv being a famously gay-friendly city. They say it's happening in Israel. And we had some friends who don't have a lot of ministry money sent $1,000 to help with publication costs of this book because we had to self-publish because no major publisher would touch it. It's a book you need to read. If you haven't ordered it yet, here's what I encourage you to do. Go to Amazon.com. Go there now. All right. As soon as you get a break, don't get in a car accident. Sorry. As soon as you have a break, go to Amazon.com, read the reviews, and then ask yourself, is this a book I need to read? A Queer Thing Happened to America. For more information, more resources, AskDrBrown.org. And we have folks standing by on our team right now that would love to talk to you. If you'd like to stand with our ministry, become a monthly torchbearer, call us at 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Ron, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
My bottom line is real simple. God has given promises to Israel, and if he can break his promises to Israel, he can break his promises to the church. He gave unconditional promises to Israel that no matter what my Jewish people do, yes, we'd be disciplined for our sin, but he would not cast us off forever. He is fulfilling his promises. He has done the physical regathering and is continuing to do that. The spiritual regathering is at hand. Be in tune with what God is doing.